Dear brother bishops, I welcome all of you on your ad limina visit to Rome, where you have come to venerate the tombs of the apostles Peter and Paul. Your visit to Rome strengthens the bonds of communion between the Catholic community in your country and the Apostolic See, a communion that sustained your people's faith for centuries and today provides fresh energies for renewal and evangelization. Even amid the pressures of a secular age, there are many signs of living faith and devotion among the Catholics of England and Wales.
Catholic bishops from across England and Wales spent 10 days here in Rome on their ad limina visits, meeting individually with Pope Benedict and doing the rounds of Vatican councils and congregations to discuss specific issues of faith, worship, religious life, ecumenical and interfaith dialogue, justice and peace, healthcare, education, and so on. The culmination of these visits is a group encounter with the Pope in which he speaks of key concerns facing the bishops, in this case also confirming widespread speculation that he himself will be travelling to Britain later this year.
On the occasion of my forthcoming apostolic visit to Great Britain, I shall be able to witness that faith for myself and the successor of Peter to strengthen and confirm it. During the months of preparations that lie ahead, be sure to encourage the Catholics of England and Wales in their devotion and assure them that the Pope constantly remembers them in his prayers and holds them in his heart.
Following that meeting with the Pope, the head of the Bishops' Conference, Archbishop Vincent Nichols of Westminster, talked to journalists about some of the highlights of this ad limina visit.
Our ad limina visit has been a very positive and encouraging experience. We have been talking about, for example, the capacity and the need for the church to bear a public witness in the political life of our country. We've been talking about the nurturing of faith through liturgy and through prayer. We've been talking about vocations to the priesthood and religious life. We've been talking about the health and the challenges facing us in parochial life. And then we've also been talking about the service that we give. In the Office for Bishops, in the Congregation for Bishops, Cardinal Ray reminded us of the phrase of Pope John Paul II when he said an ad limina visit should be an occasion for an exchange of gifts. And I must admit, that has been our experience. We've found the dicasteries ready to listen to what we wanted to say, as we have been ready to listen and receive from them.
Also sharing insights with journalists at that press conference was the Vice President of the Bishops' Conference, Archbishop Peter Smith of Cardiff.
It's not only been a good dialogue, but there's been a good sense of humour. And, say, very warm, very gracious. And we have had the opportunity this time to really discuss some of the issues with the different dicasteries, congregations of the Holy See. One issue which did come up was how were we getting on with the Equalities Bill at home in England and Wales. And I said, well, we're getting there, but we're not quite there yet. Because, you know, there have been serious difficulties over the issue of equality. The Church, of course, upholds absolutely the equal dignity of every person, irrespective of their faith, age, ability, and so on. But I think there's a misunderstanding, because sometimes in government legislation, equality seems to be that we're all absolutely equal, which we're not. We're equal in dignity. Beyond that, each one of us is unique, different size, shape, abilities, and so on. And I know it's a difficult job, and the principle of equality legislation is, in principle, good. But again, there is a misunderstanding about what discrimination means. The Church, again, is absolutely against unjust discrimination. And I use that phrase advisedly, unjust discrimination. Because there's nothing wrong, necessarily, with discrimination as such, if the word is properly understood.
Questions of equality, discrimination and freedom of expression were at the heart of the Pope's words to the bishops from England and Wales, especially in light of legislation that is currently being debated by the British Parliament. While proponents of the bill claim it will reshape the nation into a fairer, less class-conscious and discriminatory society, Christian leaders have raised fears that some clauses may conflict with the moral values of believers. This is what the Pope had to say.
Your country is well known for its firm commitment to equality of opportunity for all members of society. Yet, as you have rightly pointed out, the effect of some of the legislation designed to achieve this goal has been to impose unjust limitations on the freedom of religious communities to act in accordance with their beliefs. In some respects, it actually violates the natural law upon which the equality of all human beings is grounded, and by which it is guaranteed. I urge you, as pastors, to ensure that the Church's moral teaching be always presented in its entirety and convincingly defended.
Pope Benedict also urged the bishops to draw on the gifts of lay people in Britain to participate in national debates, but he warned against dissent and distortion of the gospel message. I asked Archbishop Nichols for his reactions to the Pope's words.
I think in the Pope's speech it's very important to see how he places those comments in the context of a strong and very positive tradition in England of freedom of speech. And clearly we're all very proud of that tradition, and it's good to see it affirmed in the words of the Holy Father that this is, you could say, a very positive fruit of the Enlightenment and all that followed from that in the point of view, the dignity of the individual and the freedom of conscience. I think what he's getting at, though, is that sometimes, particularly, I suspect, in extremes, views that are offered seem to be almost entirely negative and have very little positive intent in them. That can happen on the extreme of Catholic views, and you certainly see it on the extreme of secularist and humanist views. And I think he's saying that this extreme expression that lacks respect for the other, that is, as it were, characterized by a kind of bitterness, does not contribute to the kind of debate that we want. And when it comes to a contentious issues about church teaching, then it clearly lacks that openness that any member of the church should have towards receiving what is, in the end, a gift of truth that comes to, as the Pope says, from Scripture, from the lived faith, as interpreted in the Magisterium of the Church.
In his message to the bishops, Pope Benedict also highlighted the legacy of Cardinal John Henry Newman, the 19th century Anglican priest and Oxford academic who was later received into the Catholic Church and whose beatification the Pope is expected to preside at during his autumn visit to England.
Much attention has rightly been given to Newman's scholarship and to his extensive writings, but it is important to remember that he saw himself first and foremost as a priest. In this Annus Sacerdotalis, I urge you to hold up to your priest his example of dedication to prayer, pastoral sensitivity towards the needs of his flock, and passion for preaching the gospel.
I think that Newman's understanding of the way that faith can relate to people today, in his own day, but in our day too, in the circumstances of their times, is a message which is ever new.
Archbishop Bernard Longley has recently been appointed to head the Archdiocese of Birmingham, where Cardinal Newman spent most of his life after being received into the Catholic Church in 1845.
So, please God, the beatification of Cardinal Newman will have a beneficial effect, and I think it will strengthen also that sense of mission among the hierarchy in England and Wales and within the Church. I think it will quite rightly throw the spotlight upon the Catholic community in England and Wales, as indeed the forthcoming papal visit will do the same, but will offer us an opportunity, but it's a big challenge too, in order to relate the truths that Newman realised and expressed in his own time, which have a lasting value, how to reach into the society of our time, and how to grasp that courage, which I think the Holy Father extended to us and encouraged within us, to have the courage to be a voice for truth and to put forward the gospel message in the society of our own day. And I think that's going to be a very important challenge and should be related to what's coming up in this coming year.
Cardinal Newman, of course, is being held up as a figure for the whole church, not just for people in England, but he does have a special place in the life of your diocese, your archdiocese, doesn't he?
Very much so, and the fact that he made his home there in two places within the archdiocese, in a sense illustrates something which the Holy Father picked up also about his life, and which Archbishop Vincent Nichols has always emphasised. Not only did he find his home, and of course found his faith deepen in the home of academia, in Oxford, within the diocese, but then he moved to really define faith in the communities of the Midlands, and especially the way that the Industrial Revolution had changed the Midlands and brought communities there. And it was an act of tremendous generosity, I suppose, to leave behind the places which were so familiar and to establish himself with his companions in the heart of Birmingham, there to live as a priest, to preach, to use all the wonderful gifts that the Lord had given him and that he had developed, but to find himself in that setting so as to support the faith of others and help their faith deepen. So I think within the Archdiocese of Birmingham, the juxtaposition of Oxford in the south and Birmingham City in itself in the Midlands, those two places, the two loci for Cardinal Newman's ministry, are important in understanding his life and his holiness.
It was a huge change, wasn't it, from the very high-profile life he'd led in Oxford to the much quieter, almost isolated life there in Birmingham?
I imagine there were some similarities because, as a Don, he had lived a community life, and a very strong kind of community life in the earlier part of the 19th century in the Oxford colleges, a life of faith, of shared interest. And again, he lived as an oratorian, a community life in the midst of Birmingham. But with tremendous outreach then to people who, of course, would have had no contact with the communities in Oxford, or very little. So there is a tremendous contrast there. And to see the God's grace working within Cardinal Newman in a way which enables people today to reach him from a variety of backgrounds, I think is very, very fascinating.
He was, of course, a great writer. He was an extraordinary priest. I mean, what do you think was his greatest legacy, perhaps his most lasting legacy?
I think that he managed to touch people, certainly the evangelization of intellectual activity. He actually touches people at all sorts of different levels. And I think with the beatification, there's an opportunity for people who perhaps haven't known Newman's legacy or appreciated it as much as might be the case. And you mentioned the international interest in Newman. That's very evident. And I think we also have something to do to extend and deepen knowledge of Newman within our own setting in England and Wales. And being here in Rome too, I'm mindful of the influence and the continuing influence in Newman's life of Blessed Dominic Barbary, Blessed Dominic of the Mother of God. And that too is of great interest, I think, how Newman was drawn to this simple Italian priest from Viterbo who wanted to spend his life in England and achieve so much, I think, almost vicariously through Newman's holiness.
He is, of course, seen by some as a difficult figure for ecumenical dialogue in the sense that he was a Church of England clergyman who converted to the Catholic Church. How is this being, if you like, expressed in the preparations for his beatification?
Very positive sign, I think. As bishops, we went to the Congregation for the Evangelization of the Peoples and were welcomed very warmly by Cardinal Diaz, who showed us the chapel, the small chapel where Cardinal Newman had celebrated his first Mass. And there, together with him, we celebrated Mass in the Church of the Magi, where Cardinal Newman had been ordained as a Catholic priest. And Cardinal Diaz told us that 2 years ago, when Archbishop Williams, in fact 2006, when he came to Rome, he visited the Church of the Magi and the chapel, and there was, I think, there a real opening to understanding Newman's legacy, both within the Anglican tradition and also within the Catholic Church. So while it's a challenge, I'm quite certain that it offers us an opportunity of opening up a very fruitful dialogue about priestly ministry and about the relationship between our churches in this coming year. And I'm delighted, too, that here in Rome, the Anglican Centre has been so welcoming and a sign, I think, of that desire to draw closer together and understanding Newman. There's great interest there, too, I think.
Thank you.
Dissert Rules revealed through scripture and tradition and articulated by the Church's magisterium sets us free. Cardinal Newman realized this, and he left us an outstanding example of faithfulness to revealed truth by following the kindly light wherever it led him, even at considerable personal cost. Great writers and communicators of his stature and integrity are needed in the Church today. And it is my hope that devotion to him will inspire many to follow in his footsteps.
He's often seen, as we know, as an intellectual and perhaps someone that's slightly beyond the reach of many, but this great man was concerned with everyone and not just with those who taught or lingered in the universities.
That's Bishop Arthur Roach of Leeds in the north of England, an area of the country which has faced the closure or amalgamation of many parishes as people move south in search of jobs, a trend exacerbated by the recent economic downturn. He shared with me some of his impressions of this ad limina visit.
Well, this is my third ad limina visit. I first came back in 97 when for the first time that all the English and Welsh bishops came together with Cardinal Hume for their ad limina. Previously, they'd come province by province. So I came as General Secretary on that occasion, and then this is my second time as a bishop.
Can I ask you what particularly struck you on this visit, perhaps very different from the other ones that you've done?
I think that the last occasion I came as a bishop, Pope John Paul II was very ill. So it was clear that his interaction with the bishops was going to be limited due to his ill health. The bishops, however, were very pleased nonetheless to be associated with him on that occasion, not least because of his celebrating the 25th anniversary of his election to the See of Peter. But what has come through to us on this occasion is the warmth and the encouragement and the serenity of the Holy Father, both in our general audience with him, which the contents of which are in the public arena, and also our private audiences with him. He was very affirming of our ministry and was clearly very much aware of the challenges that we face and the opportunities that are before us in all of our situations as bishops.
Can you tell me about the specific concerns that you raised to him regarding the Leeds diocese and any particular message that he had for you regarding that area?
He was clearly very well briefed about the situation of the diocese. As you know, a quinquennial report is prepared before we go to Rome for an ad limina visit. And he had picked out very salient points, not least the process of renewal that had been established some 4 years ago, of Come and See, where we really began with basic concepts of prayer and rediscovering the Spirit of the Lord, entering into a sense of conversion, increasing the knowledge of our faith, learning what it was to and is to be part of the Church, and finally in this year of going to make disciples, the whole process of evangelization. That's on our shows. Well, he was very, very interested in that. He was also very interested in the amalgamation of parishes that I've been involved in, and also the closure of churches. And I talked to him about how that had been received, and you know the great courage of people, as well as the pain that was experienced in all of that. And he was very encouraging, saying that you know this is a necessary work that needs to be done in order to strengthen the base of the Church for the future, always around the ministry of the priests, always around the celebration of the Eucharist. So those were very encouraging words for me, and to know that he realized what actually goes on in my diocese and was deeply interested in that.
It's my first ad limina visit, and I don't know if I came with any preconceptions about what it was going to be like. It certainly was going to be hard work, I think. But it's turned out to be a rather pleasant experience and a very encouraging one.
Bishop John Arnold serves as auxiliary in the Archdiocese of Westminster, with responsibility first for media and now international affairs. I talked to him about his impressions of this first ad limina visit and his hopes for the forthcoming papal visit to Britain.
We've had some excellent meetings with congregations and councils. I think in all we've been to 24, not all the bishops have been to all the meetings. But in every one there's been a real sense of helpfulness, encouragement and challenge too in some places, which is what we do need to keep in mind.
In particular?
Well, I think one or two of the bishops really rejoiced in was public health, where they were told that our conference was the best in the world for the way we responded and organised ourselves in terms of public health. And that's always a wonderful thing, to be complimented in that way.
We heard Pope Benedict during this ad limina visit confirming that he will be coming to England later on this year. How are you going to be preparing the church in Britain over the coming months?
Well, there's quite a lot to be done, isn't it? It was wonderful to hear him actually say, yes, I'm coming, because we've been making remote preparations for this, and it's only a few months away, so quite a lot of work has been done, but now we can begin to firm up what we're doing. But I think it's that sense that we are one church. That's what the feeling we've got whilst we're here as bishops, is that sense that we've got to keep on renewing that collaboration. We are in communion with one another, and the church in England and Wales can never be in isolation in that sense. It's always got to be working with the greater church. And that's very present with us in England and Wales anyway, because we're such a cosmopolitan society these days. Enormous numbers of migrants, not just from Europe and the EU, but coming from all over the world, particularly in my diocese. I think that we have a wonderful cosmopolitan feel. But that sense of church is there, and it's very important that we connect again. And we've seen the Holy Father here twice in our individual audiences, and then when we met together as a conference with him. And there's a wonderful serenity, and there's a quiet joy about the man. And I think it's important that that connection reflects that, that as a church, we've got lots of challenges, and we're living in a very secular world, and there are all sorts of difficulties around. But what is the church about? It's evangelization, it's taking people on their faith journey, it's facing the challenges generation on generation, and trying to place Christ at the heart of what we do and what we are.
As you probably saw, the British press didn't really take it that way. There were some fairly angry headlines about the Pope's words criticising the equality legislation that's going through. What was your reaction? Were you surprised? Are you concerned?
Well, yes, I think the address for us confirmed really all the good things that we feel we're trying to do and be as church in England and Wales. We are facing quite a lot of challenges within legislation, proposed legislation. And I think he was right to say that we've got to hold on to the truths that we have and represent ourselves and many people in our country as best we can. The headlines, I don't know quite why the media wanted to see the Pope's report in that way. I don't think he attacked anybody. He certainly challenged and gave us a warning that, you know, we can easily slip away from the real sense of equality within our society, but we've got to deal with what we believe to be the truth. So I think the media will settle down, but disheartening, no, not necessarily that surprising that the press wanted to grab hold of it. It's going to be an enormous event, the Pope in Britain, and they'll want to see things from lots of different directions, I think.
Some of these groups who are protesting about his words are also talking about organising protests during the visit. Do you think there's any way you can engage better with these kind of groups, homosexual rights groups and so on, before the visit?
To a large extent, I think that there is already engagement. It's, if you like, the most vociferous who it's more difficult to make good contact with. They're, in a way, they set their stall out and they don't really want to talk, I don't think. But there, within our country, for example, with the homosexual groups, there are very good relations with all sorts of... We talk, we have to underline our pastoral care for, we have to underline what the teaching of the church is regarding homosexuality. But there's very good and positive relations with many of the groups. I think we will always find that there will be the more extreme voices that will want to engage in exchanges that won't be that helpful, but I don't think they're really representative.
Do you think the Pope's words will have a significant impact on the actual legislation, the lawmakers that are considering this equality bill going through Parliament at the moment?
Well, I think any voice is important. I think we're pretty well organised within ourselves, within the conference, within the church, to speak out about what we believe the legislation would mean and what changes we would like to see made to it. To have the Pope actually say this is a concern, I think, is helpful to us. Whether it has a direct impact, yes, I think it probably does. In some way, it probably does.
You work ecumenically on this issue particularly, as well as many other concerns in the public sector, mm-hmm. don't you? How important is this cooperation, particularly with the Church of England?
Well, I think it's very important because in many ways the Church of England and the Catholic Church are in dialogue about any number of issues and working very well together. We tend to choose, don't we, those particular issues that people might say divide us, and they get all the attention, where in fact there's quite an energy behind ecumenical relations. And when Anglicanorum Caetibus came out, and there was a great concentration on the damage it might be doing, well, it doesn't seem actually to be doing any damage, and it certainly hasn't put an end to what we understood as ecumenical relations and dialogue, but it adds a new dimension to it. So I think relations are good, and I think Archbishop Rowan Williams has been wonderful in his accommodation of what's happening, that we must face new circumstances in a new and positive way.
What do you hope the Pope can bring to England during this trip?
I hope that he will have much to say about that dialogue between faiths, which is going on and really is quite healthy in many aspects in our society. But I think if he comes to Great Britain and says, I am the voice of the Catholic Church, and the Catholic Church works with and recognises and respects other faiths, and together we make this cosmopolitan society one which is strong, ethically clear, because we do believe so much in common in terms of our society, the values of the society in which we live. And if we can work together, we make a big impact together for the good. So I hope that that sense of dialogue will be there, and that sense of challenge, that some of the things that we've lost or are under threat, like family life, I think marriage and family life need to be high on the agenda these days. There's been a lot of erosion, and we need to recognise that actually the erosion in marriage and family life has not made our society a better place to live in.
I commend your apostolic ministry to this intercession of St. David, St. George, and all the saints and martyrs of England and Wales. May Our Lady of Walsingham guide and protect you always.
Pope Benedict XVI addressing bishops from England and Wales on their ad limina visits to the Vatican. And on this programme you heard Bishop John Arnold, Auxiliary of Westminster, Bishop Arthur Roach of Leeds, Archbishop Bernard Longley of Birmingham, Archbishop Peter Smith of Cardiff, and Archbishop Vincent Nichols of Westminster. My thanks to them all, and thanks to you for joining me on this edition of the English programme. Don't forget you can find all our news and feature programmes on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. Stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.